And good afternoon. You are tuned to KTOO, and this is Juno Afternoon for Tuesday, August 27th. My name is Martha Moore, your host today, and we have a wonderful program lined up for you. In the next hour, we'll learn about Sitka's upcoming whale fest. Nancy DeCherney, Jerry Donahoe, and Joe Orzi will whet our appetites for Saturday's food fest at the Jack. We'll talk to cellist Zuhal Bailey about Sunday's Made in America concert, and we'll be talking to Kristen Bartlett about some school events. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. The forecast today is calling for increasing clouds and rain developing in the late evening. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 62.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. For the first time in 130 years, a new totem pole was raised in the national park in Haida Gwaii on British Columbia's northwest coast. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, it marks a major milestone and the anniversary of an agreement between the Haida and the Canadian government.
The totem pole has deep spiritual significance for the Haida. Less than a year ago, a powerful earthquake struck off the British Columbia coast. It stopped hot water from flowing into Hot Springs Island in Guayanas. According to native legend, the quake was the work of a supernatural being that holds up the Haida Gwaii and is responsible for the quakes. The image of that sacred one is carved into the totem pole that commemorates the ancient and modern historic events. The raising of the legacy pole, as it's called, also celebrates the 20th anniversary of an agreement between the Haida and the federal government to protect and preserve the Guayanas region. Jason Alsop is with the Council of the Haida Nation.
The Guayanas Agreement itself essentially agrees to disagree about who owns the land between the Council of the Haida Nation and Canada, but we agree to work together to protect the area.
The nearly 6,000-pound totem pole was raised by about 200 people using only five ropes and sheer manpower. The site? Lyle Island, where in 1985 the Haida led a political standoff to protest against logging in the area. It is now designated a heritage site and a national park reserve. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
More than two dozen Department of Defense munition barrels dumped into Lake Superior during the Cold War years will be removed, possibly next month. Mike Simonson reports.
There are nearly 1,500 barrels in at least three dump sites between Duluth and Knife River, Minnesota. The Army Corps of Engineers was ordered by the DOD to dump the barrels between 1958 and 1962 because they held secret munitions parts. Last year, contractors for the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa raised 25 barrels. They discovered that 22 of those 55-gallon drums held 15,000 flash drive-size cluster bomb detonators. Because these still live explosives could go off, contractors wrapped each barrel in overpacks and returned them to Lake Superior's bottom. Now Red Cliff says it'll remove those barrels so they can examine their contents. In a news conference last March, Tribal Chairwoman Rose Gurnall-Sawyer said this recovery is part of their mission to protect the ceded territory, including Western Lake Superior.
We feel dedicated to do that, dedicated to the cause of seeing what's in those barrels, seeing if it's harmful to our lake, to the environment, to our wildlife, to our eagles, and just to people who recreate in the lake if they ingest water.
Redcliffe says a preliminary report shows that the three non-hazardous barrels recovered are no threat to the water or fish consumption, but a final report won't be ready until next May. There is no plan to remove other barrels, but they say that may change. So far, the DOD has paid Red Cliff $3.3 million to locate, remove, and study the barrels. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
The Northern Arapaho Tribe's Housing Authority has received a more than $1 million Indian Community Development Block grant. As Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhorov reports, it will help improve a health care facility.
The competitive grant was awarded by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. State Representative Patrick Goggles, who will administer the grant, says the money will be used for upgrades to the Fort Washakie Health Center on the Wind River Indian Reservation.
It'll expand the number of patient rooms, and it'll expand the amount of health care that it dispenses to the clientele on the reservation.
The clinic at Fort Washakie serves both the Northern Arapaho and Eastern Shoshone tribes who share the Wind River Indian Reservation. Goggle says the current building is 100 years old and desperately needs renovations in order to adequately serve its clientele. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhorov.
We'll be right back. During this month in 2012, Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper named Leona Aglukkaq as the country's ambassador on the International Arctic Council. The Inuk woman from Nunavut assumed the position in May and will chair the council for 2 years. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you're tuned to Juno Afternoon on KTOO, and I have online with me our first two guests. They are Ellen Chenoweth and Madison Cosma, and they are from Sitka, and they are online to tell us everything we want to know about the Sitka Whale Fest. And I will go ahead and start talking to them. Are you online, Ellen and Madison?
Yeah, we are. Yep.
Great. This Whale Fest is October 31st through November 3rd, and it's the 17th annual, so this has been going on for quite some time.
Yeah, exactly. 17 years now.
And who puts this on?
Sitka Whale Fest used to be its own nonprofit, but last year it merged with the Sitka Sound Science Center here, so it's a program of them.
So are you employees of the Sitka Sound Science Center?
Yes. I'm the Sitka Whale Fest coordinator.
And I'm actually in a kind of different situation. I'm a graduate student through the University of Alaska Fairbanks, but I work closely with one of the biologists that is at the Science Center, so I kind of work out of that office, and I've volunteered to help run this new event that we're having this year, the Film Fest.
Okay. Let's get to the Film Fest, but let me just ask you, what's the purpose of the Whale Fest, and how did it get started?
The purpose of Whale Fest is to bring science to the non-scientists. So it's a marine science symposium. It's this four-day event where we're just celebrating marine life. It's educational, it's affordable, and it's fun. So it's just this great opportunity for you to come to Sitka and just learn about the issues that are connecting us here in Alaska. And it started, as we said, 17 years ago, this group of Sitkins. They wanted to figure out a way to bring tourists to Sitka in the off-season. So most people know there's tons of whales here in the summer, but a lot of people don't know that there's more actually in the fall. So they wanted to bring more tourism here, and they wanted to start educational tourism. And over the years, Sitka Whale Fest has developed this reputation of being able to communicate marine science issues to the general public, bridging the gap between the scientists and the public.
What a great idea. And I understand that every year has a theme. What is this year's theme?
This year's theme, we're really excited, is the Arctic Sea Change, What's Ahead. As everyone knows, climate change has a big effect on the Arctic, so that's what we'll be talking about this year.
Okay, and I understand this is a four-day festival, and it includes a science symposium and many other activities, which we'll get to in a minute, but let's talk about the science symposium a little bit first. What does that involve?
The science symposium involves 9 talks, so there's 3 talks a day, and they're about 40 minutes long, and in between you'll have a break to go to the other events.
And lots of time for questions, and we're going to have some really, really great speakers this time. So one that I'm really excited about, there's a woman coming. Her name's Yulia Yevchenko, and it's almost like a James Bond story. She found some formerly secret records in the Russian archives about illegal Soviet whaling that was going on, and so she'll be presenting information about that, how they're trying to update these catch numbers from this whaling that, until recently, we had no idea how much whaling was going on. So that's going to be really exciting. And we've got other talks looking at bowheads and narwhals and all kinds of sea ice issues and how people who live up in the Arctic and coastal communities are going to be adapting to climate change.
Wow, that's wonderful. You talked a little bit about wanting to attract tourists who want to be educated on these issues. Is it geared towards the layperson?
Yeah, exactly. So It's science for the non-scientists. So we have people of all ages that come. So no matter your background or your education, you can come and you can understand what's going on. We have our middle schoolers come to these talks. So it's very welcoming and comfortable for anyone to come and understand.
And as far as tourists, we tend to get a lot of people from other areas of Southeast Alaska. So it's not your typical cruise ship passenger. These are tend to be regional people that just come to Sitka. It's a beautiful little town right on the outer coast of Alaska. It's got a lot to offer. So it's kind of nice you can come and mingle with people who live in your same region, but maybe that you don't live in your town.
Do you get people from out of state or out of the country?
Yeah, every once in a while we do. We're trying to expand our audience, but yes, we do. One thing we like to say is this is kind of like the Alaska time to come to Sitka, because as Ellen said, it's not all the cruise ship passengers, so it's less of that hustle and bustle.
And so how many do you usually get?
We get between like 150 and 200 people registering.
Okay, so let's go over some of the other activities and events.
All right, so we have a lot of events for different every kind of people. We have art, we have music, we have a fun run you can do. One of our main events we really like to have is our wildlife cruises, where you can see whales and sea otters. That's on Saturday and Sunday. We have art classes for kids. We have a family concert for everyone.
Great. And getting back to the film fest, how did you get the idea for a film fest?
Well, I was actually really lucky. I'm a graduate student, and I happen to study whales as well. I study humpback whales feeding mostly at salmon hatcheries in Southeast Alaska. But I do research with whales feeding all throughout the area. And so we had some really good footage, and my program was kind of encouraging us to make videos. And it's something that's happening more and more, because video is such a powerful medium for scientists or for anyone to get their message out. And it's become more and more easy for people to just produce videos in their own homes and on personal computers. So for me, it was a wonderful way for me to connect both with colleagues, people that I would hope to work with, other scientists, and also with people who were just kind of interested, you know, my friends who said, you know, what do you do for all day long when you're doing your schoolwork? And, you know, I showed it to my niece. She's 4 years old, and she loves to watch it, too. So it's just a great tool for scientists, and I think it's happening more and more.
Submit videos?
So submitting is pretty easy. If you just go to our website at sitkawhalefest.org, you can email Madison and just let us know that you're interested in submitting a video. Right now we have the deadline as being September 1st, and I know that that's coming up very, very quickly. We hope to get some videos that people have already made for their own purposes, but if you want a little bit more time to put a video together, just let us know that, and we'll just be in touch, and we can work with you on that.
Okay, so let me repeat that the schedule for the Whale Fest and all the information you might want to have is on sitkawhalefest.org. And what impressed me is a person could conceivably attend everything on the schedule. I think that's great.
Yeah, we try not to have overlap, so if you want to go to all the different events, you won't miss out.
And I know on that website is contact number and email. I don't know if you want to tell us what that is on the air here.
Yeah, so if you have any questions, go ahead and email me at sitkawhalefest@gmail.com, or feel free to call me at 231-282-0061.
Okay, and I assume since we're talking about this far in advance of the event, that it takes a little planning ahead of time for someone to get everything in order to attend. What do people need to know?
Well, first of all, the main reason we wanted to do this now was because we're hoping to get people in Juneau and Gustavus and Hoonah to submit videos of research that they've done. Or even if it's you're not a researcher, if you just love making videos, find a researcher who's doing something you're interested in and get together with them and make a video about their research. So that's really why we wanted to do it now. In terms of attending Whale Fest, we have a registration deadline that's October 1st is the end of early registration. And Maddie can give you the details on how that works.
Yeah, so if you register before October 1st, you get a discount of $75, and after that it's $95, but you can register all the way up until the day of the event. For the other events, there's individual prices, which you can find on our website, and for those events, you can also register for those at the door if you want. But a lot of people like to get their tickets ahead of time, so they make sure they have a spot.
I think that's a great price for all of those things that are going on. How about lodging? Does that get tight?
No, it doesn't. We have a discounted rate with the local hotel here, Westmart. So we have, if you call them and you say you're going to attend Whale Fest, they'll give you a discount of $89 a night. We also have other vacation rentals around here. And what's so great about Sitka is it's so small and walkable that you don't have to worry about a car, and you can get to everything just on foot.
Okay. I've been speaking with Ellen Chenoweth and Madison Cosma about the Sitka Whale Fest, which is happening in Sitka on October 31st through November 3rd. It sounds like a terrific festival, and I want to thank you both for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Okay.
Yeah,
thanks. And I'm going to play some recordings of humpback whales for you.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, August 27, 2013. It's the birthday of novelist Theodore Dreiser, born in Terre Haute, Indiana in 1871, known for writing realistic books like Sister Carrie and An American Tragedy. Dreiser got the idea for An American Tragedy when he read a newspaper article about a man who had murdered his pregnant girlfriend to keep their relationship a secret. An American Tragedy came out in 1925, the same year as Hemingway's In Our Time and Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby. It was much longer than either of those books, and it was a difficult read, and yet it sold 13,000 copies in 2 weeks and went on to become by far the bestseller that year. Though he lived another 20 years, Dreiser never published another novel in his lifetime. And it's the birthday of travel writer William Least Heatmoon, born William Trogdon in Kansas City, Missouri. He was a university professor in the late 70s when, within the course of a few months, his life seemed to have fallen apart. He lost his teaching job because of declining student enrollment, and his wife of 11 years separated from him. He decided to take to the open road and live what he called the real jeopardy of circumstance. Over the course of several months, he traveled 13,000 miles around the country. The book in which he chronicled his adventures, Blue Highways, was published in 1982 and garnered widespread acclaim. And it's the birthday of the philosopher Georg Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, born in Stuttgart, Germany, in 1770. He started out as a philosopher of Christianity, and he was particularly interested in how Christianity is a religion based on opposites. He believed that Jesus had emphasized love as the chief virtue because love can bring about the marriage of opposites. Hegel eventually went beyond religion and began to argue that the subject of philosophy was reality as a whole. He wanted to create a philosophy that described how and why human beings created communities and governments, made war, destroyed each other's societies, and built themselves up to do it all over again. What Hegel came up with was his concept of dialectic, which is the idea that all human progress is driven by the conflict of opposites. At the time of his death, Hegel was the most prominent philosopher in Europe, and his school of thought gave rise to a group of revolutionaries, including Friedrich Engels and Karl Marx, who argued that the most important dialectic of history was between worker and master, rich and poor, and their ideas led to the birth of communism. And here's a poem by Mark Halliday, quite frankly. They got old and died, but first they composed plangent depictions of how much they lost and how much cared about losing. Meantime, their hair got thin and more thin as their shoulders went slumpy. Okay, but not before the photo albums got arranged by them, arranged with a niftiness, not just two or three, but 18 photo albums. Yes, 18 eventually, 18 albums proving the beauty of them and not someone else. Them and their relations and friends, incontrovertible, playing croquet in that Bloomington yard, floating on those comic inflatables at Dow Lake, giggling at the Dairy Queen, waltzing at the wedding, building a Lego palace on the porch, holding the baby beside a rental truck, leaning on the Hemingway statue at Pamplona, discussing the eternity of art in that Sardinian restaurant. Yes, and so, quite frankly, at the end of the day, they got old and died. Okay, sure, but quite frankly, how much does that matter in view of the 18 photo albums? Big ones, 13 inches by 12 inches each, full of such undeniable beauty. Quite frankly, a poem by Mark Halliday, from his collection, Threshophobe, published by University of Chicago Press, and used here by permission on the Writer's Almanac. This is Billy Collins for the Writer's Almanac, hoping you will join us here next time.
And you're tuned to KTOO. I'm Martha Moore, your host for today's Juno Afternoon, and the studio has been flooded with food festival people. And we have here in the
overgrown
studio,
you mean?
yes, just ready, ripe for harvesting. Nancy DeCherney, Jerry Donahoe, and Ed Byarski. And they're here to talk about the annual food festival. It's at the Jack this Saturday from 9 to 3. And
9 this to 2.
Is 9 to 2, okay. Mm-hmm. And this is the big end of season farmers market, which has become a tradition. What's the goal of the festival?
What's the goal of the festival?
Yeah.
Well, we want to have fun mostly. But initially it was a collaboration with the Juneau Economic Development Council, the Cooperative Extension Service, the Slow Food Movement people, us, and I don't remember who all. It was a whole
Sustainability
The Sustainability Commission,
Committee,
yes.
Yeah.
The whole idea is to see what we can be growing in Juneau to support ourselves in the event of, on it, you know, if we couldn't barge it in or fly it in, then what would happen? So it started out in that way, and it's just become, I think this is the sixth annual one, and people just really seem to, like, who doesn't like food, right? I mean,
well,
and it's an opportunity for some shameless commerce, too.
Yes, and so there's some shameless commerce that goes on. There's learning. There's some learning things. We have workshops, and I've selected the workshops this year. Rachel Usler's been helping me with that based on requests from last year that people have asked for. Sarah Lewis will be teaching how to make sauerkraut at 9:15 in the morning. I think that's a noble endeavor.
breakfast.
Well, it could be. 10 a.m., Darren Snyder is going to be talking about gardening with kids. Dr. Emily Kane will be in at 10:45 to talk about kitchen medicine. Lois Dorshak will be in to talk about pest management. And by the way, I have mealybugs on my Hoya. I'm unhappy about that, so hopefully she'll help me with that. At 12:15, we have Mark Cozy from Haines. He's a forager. A lot of people were asking for information on how to do foraging and what wild plants are available and that sort of stuff, so he'll talk about that. And then at 1 p.m., Ed Bajarski is going to talk about overwintering fuchsias, begonias, and dahlias, and he'll talk about a little bit more about that in a minute. We just have a ton of people coming, but maybe I'll let these two guys talk, and then if there's anything left over, I'll tell you what else is happening.
All right. Well, a wonderful variety of workshops, and what else?
And free. Okay.
Some of the different people who will be there in the hall will have fresh local produce to sell. And in the past, at least you've had some fresh fish, I believe. I don't know if you have this year again.
Actually, we've got Pinky's Fish Market is coming, so she's going to be doing that.
Oh,
she might just be doing salmon or barbecue sandwiches and stuff like that, but you never know.
Sounds good. So there will be all sorts of stuff, from potatoes and garlic and fresh greens, herbs.
Usually sorrel soup.
And sorrel soup sounds good. I know in the past we've had have the bakers.
Yep, Wild Oven
bread
will be
people.
There.
Good. Mm-hmm. That's always tasty. Yeah. I mean, I'm happy to swap my produce for bread.
Raw food and food ready to eat.
The sherbet's going to be there, the rhubarb sherbet.
Prepared food.
Okay. Good deal. So it should be a great time for people to show up and certainly get some. There will be some recipes, I believe, available to go with some of the food that's being prepared. I think Jerry will be cooking, right?
Yes, I'm going to be there courtesy of the State of Alaska Division of Agriculture Chef at the Market grant program. So I received a grant this summer to show up at the farmers markets and basically go around with an empty basket and fill it up with whatever they have available, and then just start cooking and handing out free food, which is really fun.
That's fun. So you can't prepare ahead of time. You're just going to be presented.
Well, I contact each farmer and find out what they're going to bring, because part of the program is for me to hand out recipes, too, for whatever I'm going to be doing. So I do contact each one of the farmers and get a list of what they're doing, and I try to put together some simple things, because I'm basically just doing some stovetop cooking, although I will be using an oven on Saturday to do some kale chips, which are a real fun thing to do with kale.
And kale grows really well around here.
It does. Like rhubarb, it's just loves the Juneau rain and sun. I've had a lot of rhubarb this year, too, and I've been doing a spicy rhubarb chutney that people just love.
Are you a cook professionally?
Yes, I'm a professional chef. So the Chef at the Market program basically reaches out to local chefs. There's six of them in the state right now that are part of the program. I'm the only one in the southeast, but there's chefs in Fairbanks, Anchorage, Matsu Valley, Seward, that show up at these farmers markets and do all this cooking. Basically, we just want Alaskans to learn how to be able to prepare Alaskan-grown specialty crops. So we focus on the fruits and vegetables and nuts and herbs and things like that are grown locally in Alaska. And then we're actually restricted to using only Alaska-grown produce. So like the fungi is going to be here Saturday with mushrooms, but they're not from Alaska, so I can't use them. I'm kind of sad about that.
Okay. So Ed brought me a cherry tomato and a kiwi, and I don't guess I know what a kiwi is. I've never seen it.
Well, these, not looking like that at least. I mean, these are small, kind of the first joint of your little finger size, smooth green fruits. And unfortunately, they're not quite ripe. Probably about another 2 weeks or so, they will ripen.
But you can't eat them.
Oh, yeah. They taste like kiwis, remarkably enough. And they will start to soften. And that's the time to pick them. They grow on a very vigorous vine. And these are not like the Australian and New Zealand kiwis. These are actually from northern China and Russia. Extremely hardy, they ripen in Fairbanks. They do well in Fairbanks, as well as here in Juneau. No pests, no diseases. I mean, I haven't yet even had the birds or bears go after them. So they are terrific, and they're a vigorous growing vine that you need a male and a female, or multiple females, to get berries. And this year, it's going to be a great crop, and one of the things, other than just fresh eating, you can turn them into raisins, or kiwi raisins, I guess. Well, that's taken too. Have to come up with a new name for those. But also, we make kiwi pies.
Oh.
And those, if you pick them when they're still on the firm side and a little tart, incredible with cinnamon and nutmeg and sugar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like it'd be a good chutney, too.
Probably would, yes. Yeah. Sure would. Yeah, well, maybe in about 2 weeks when I have some, I'll get you some to try to make some.
Now, what else are you bringing, Ed?
I'll have an assortment of herbs in pots as well as some cut herbs. And I'll have some of my fourth crop of basil potted. So I'll have those plus some of the tomatoes, not a lot, some cucumbers, a good amount of garlic, and probably some plants. Unfortunately, all I have is male kiwi plants anymore. All the females were sold. People bought
now,
more
just
of
how
those.
Can you tell them apart?
By flowers. Pretty much, you've got to, ideally, they're labeled, males and females.
You'll turn them upside down
and look. The flowers, you can tell. And the leaves, on a mature plant, the leaf color is different. Males have a very colorful, variegated leaf, green and pink and white leaves, where the females have very little color. Kind of like with birds, really, in that way. So growing side by side, if they're not completely intertwined, you can, and then once they have fruit on them, it's obvious. Only the females have fruit.
So the festival is free, but really the event is all about people selling their produce.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not all about that. I would say it's split 50-50 between people sharing information, and any of the people, organizations that are there sharing information, their entry into the booths were free, but we do have, like the Cooperative Extension Service will be there with information. I think Community Gardens is going to be there just with information about how to become a member of the Community Gardens. But then, as you know, Ed will be there, the Orsi family will be there with produce for sale, Wild Oven will be there with bread. There's a couple of groups that I'm not real sure just from their names exactly what they're doing, but we have people who regularly come with jams and jellies that they've made, and Chef Steph is going to be there, and there's an effort to do a food co-op. So there'll be some, it's a combination of just information about other art, food or community organizations that you can become a part of if you're interested in this kind of stuff, or like Turning the Tides is going to be there, and the Greenhouses people, and then, you know, there's going to be Breezy Street barbecue and food. I mean, it's just a kind of it's a festival.
It is.
Yeah, it's fun.
And really, for those of us who are selling produce, people should be asking us, well, how can we grow our own? You know, I'll have some seeds, some of the hardy kale seeds that do so well. So folks ask, how can I grow that? Or how do I grow hardy kiwis? Or with our garlic, we'll be selling, the Orsis and I will be selling garlic. And that can be planted this fall in about
like
another month. Like a bulb. But there's some, you know, there's some fine points in that one too. So please, people should ask us, how do we grow this stuff? How much do I need? Well, you can't, you know, it's hard to grow too much garlic, really. But still, how do we grow this for ourselves? I mean, we want to sell it, yes, but we want to help other people grow more of it too, which is better for all of us.
Yes. You looked like you were going to say something.
Do you consider Juno a good place for gardening?
Yes, it is.
It works for him.
It's more work. It is more work than living in Iowa
or
Upper Michigan where I grew up.
Yes.
Or, yeah, Haines, I'm doing some gardening up there for growing potatoes and garlic. And it's warmer and drier up there, so you've got to work at it. You've got to make good soil and nice beds and all that. But the cool weather crops do so incredibly well here, from peas and beets and cabbages and broccoli and kale, you know, that kind of stuff. Carrots and potatoes, tremendous. You know, you can't find them that taste that good in the grocery store.
When you compare a freshly grown something or other to something that's been in the grocery store, even dried beans, I have family that grow dried beans, and just the difference between fresh and something that's been in the grocery store for a while is remarkable, and it's worth the effort if you as a chef can speak to that.
Right, and beyond taste, the nutritional value of eating something that just got picked the morning of is just amazing, you know, so...
I just want to highlight a couple of the other groups that are going to be there. James Volkers is going to be there with pots that he's overglazing right at the moment. We have Misty Van Zandt will be there. Alaskan Fire is going to be there. There's a root cellar farm coming. We've mentioned the Orsi family. There's just quite a wide variety, and I encourage people to come because it is it's free and it's in the morning, and then you can go do something else. What the heck?
If we're lucky, it'll be kind of gloomy and rainy on that day, so people will want to come indoors as opposed to this beautiful day we're having outside.
But we'll put the lawn furniture up and everybody will have a nice time.
Sure, sounds good.
Are there any booths left to reserve?
I have two.
Okay.
So if anybody wants to get in the game, and like I said, if you're a not-for-profit organization and you just want to share information about what your organization does that may be along this line or has something to do with helping people become self-sustaining in this environment, then please give me a call because that booth's free for you.
And what's your number?
586-2787.
Okay, and the best place to get information would be?
On the JAHC website, jahc.org.
Okay, so I'm talking with Nancy DeCherney, Jerry Donahoe, and Ed Bajarski. And about the food festival, it's this Saturday at the Jack from 9 to 2.
Yes.
And
it's free.
And it's free. And it sounds like a really wonderful event.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Come on down for some
we'll
tasty
and yummy as well.
And yummy.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
Come hungry.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
There are spices and vegetables that you can grow. Some are under the ground, some grow tall. Though they all have their qualities, this you must know, that the garlic is best of them all. The Egyptians, Phoenicians, the Vikings, the Greeks, Babylonians, Danes, and Chinese on their voyages took enough garlic for weeks, and their enemies died on the breeze. Since biblical times, in all parts of the earth, it has cured countless sufferings and ills. Oh, if we understood what the garlic is worth, we would throw out our poisonous pills. Bulgaria's mountains and Russia's white plains, people live to 100 years old. For it's juice of the garlic that runs in their veins, oh, it's worth twice its weight in pure gold. With selenium, germanium, allicin too, it can fight off all types of disease. So if you've got arthritis, TB, or the flu, just say, peel me a garlic clove, please. Plant some cloves in your garden to keep away worms and the other bad things that kill plants. If you're one of those people concerned about germs, you can drop one or two in your pants. There are spices and vegetables that you can grow. Some are under the ground, some grow tall. Though they all have their qualities, this you must know, that the garlic is best of them all. Oh, the garlic is best of them all. Yes, the garlic is best of them all.
And you're listening to KTOO, Juno Afternoon, and I have on the phone line with me Zuhal Bailey, a cellist who will be performing next Sunday night at the Jack, along with pianist Lara Downs. And Zuhal Bailey has been described as one of the finest cellists alive today. And if you hear him play, you'll realize that this is not just hyperbole. He is actually awesome. And I've heard him speak as well. And I might add, he's a great ambassador for classical music and for the cello. Hi, Zuhal.
What am I supposed to say after that? Thank you very much. I have to start reading haiku or something.
Welcome to Juno Afternoon. And It's really a thrill to have you and Lara Downs come and perform in Juneau. Okay, let me just say, I feel like the sound of the cello is so emotional and passionate, kind of on a visceral level, and maybe you can explain that to me.
Well, I think that, I mean, this is, of course, what brought me to the cello at age four. It was the sound of the human voice, as if someone was telling you a story. Just by hearing the basic sounds of the cello, I've always been drawn to it. It's got, I've also been also drawn to cellos that produce very woodsy, earthy sounds. And this is in particular the cello that I'm playing on for these concerts. It's made in 1693 in Venice, Italy. It's a historic instrument that is known for its visceral sound. I jokingly call it the James Earl Jones of cellos. Those of you out there who are movie buffs would know that James Earl Jones is the voice of Darth Vader and also CNN. But this is telling a story. If I were to hear James Earl Jones tell a story, he could read the phone book and I would be interested. The basic sound of his voice is so diverse and multifaceted and comforting, and as is the cello as an instrument. And so when I first wrapped my arms around it at age four, I felt the sounds of, you know, the basic sounds of the instrument, but also the vibrations. Of course, the pin is sitting on the floor, so you feel it from your feet to the top of your head. As a performer, you wrap your arms around it, and the vibrations go into your heart. And so you're really hugging this wonderful instrument that is producing, you know, kind of, if you're lucky, what comes from you as the interpreter of this great music. So I think it sums it up.
So tell me, when you wrapped your arms around it as a four-year-old, isn't that kind of a big instrument?
Oh, of course, they make cellos that are very small as well. In fact, the cello that I first played on was pretty much a viola with a chopstick sticking out of the bottom of it. They're made for size. And as I got older, I got a bigger and bigger instrument, yes.
So was there any questions about whether this would be your career? Did you have any doubts along the way?
I luckily didn't. I was told at 12 that if I could find a way to do what I love for my life, that I'd never work. I'd never have a job, because what I love, if you can do what you love, you're the luckiest person on the planet. And at 12, I literally thought for about 5 seconds, and the only thing that consistently gave me, you know, pure emotion, pleasure, communication, warmth, was the cello. And in fact, my parents jokingly tell people that, you know, they had to ask me to stop practicing. It wasn't to try to get me to play the cello. That's never been a problem.
Yeah, so I guess that explains how you can keep at this year after year, even when maybe you're playing the same music over and over again.
Maybe I'm very diverse in what I do. I come up with these projects that are very interesting to me at any given year. This year, obviously, is American music. Last year I was in Juneau, where the complete works of Bach. Sometimes it's a concerto here and there. Sometimes it's great chamber music. You know, to play as a cellist, you really have to diversify to play the greats. As the connoisseurs know, Mozart wrote nothing for the cello as a solo instrument. So for people like myself to play any great Mozart, I have to play in a quartet or a quintet, which is obviously more than a few people. And so even including the works of Schubert and things like that, I tend to use the cello as this vehicle to kind of maneuver through history and play different kinds of eras. So I never get bored, but I also don't allow myself to get bored, because I try to be as multifaceted as I can, you know, just to kind of always keep the blinders off.
Mm-hmm. So the concert's called Made in America, and you're performing with pianist Lara Downs. Tell us about the music you'll be performing Sunday night.
Well, because I am obviously a frequent performer in Alaska, and this is my third or fourth visit to Juneau, I take great responsibility to, with Linda Rosenthal, of course, create a program that creates and gives familiarity insight into new works, as well as in every way possible to introduce new performers to Alaskans and to people from Juneau. So now that I have come there four times, everyone trusts that the evening will be a certain vibe, a very warm, expressive vibe, where they will come out, inspired by the things that I can maybe introduce to them through the creative process of programming, but also to the people that I and Linda Rosenthal surround ourselves with. So in this case, Laura Downs will be giving this whole program, Made in America, is about Americans, composers that we know of very well, which include Leonard Bernstein and Samuel Barber, and as well as the exiles, the people who came from other countries and moved to the United States, America, and built their lives, but had heritage from other places, but really felt like America was home. And so the first half of the program is going to be very interesting. It's all Laura, and she will play excerpts, and like it's almost a tapas menu of featuring these composers from America that came over from other countries, and some of their more significant works. And she's going to be walking us all through it. I've kind of given her carte blanche to entertain us for the first half of the program, in this way, guiding us through, not just one work, but many, many different kinds of works to show contrast and, insight, as I said. And in the second half of the program, I will join her and we will play one of the great masterworks for cello and piano, by Samuel Barber. As for those who are movie buffs again, Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings is one of the most famous things he wrote. It was featured in Platoon, the movie, and as well as other things. He just a glorious romantic composer who wrote this beautiful cello sonata, and we're going to be also tackling the clarinet sonata by Leonard Bernstein for cello and piano as a transcription.
Interesting. So have you, do you play with Laura Downs regularly?
Well, I first was introduced to her via a project that I put together for El Paso Pro Musica. Actually, it was a project that I heard about featuring the making of a Steinway piano. And this project was a documentary, a film, about how this group went to Sitka, Alaska, found the Sitka spruce, and then the process of building a piano out of it, from literally forest to concert hall. And then at the end of the movie that I showed at the festival in El Paso, we wheeled out the actual piano to the stage. We brought it in by truck, and Laura Downs was the featured performer on the piano that night as a featured pianist recitalist. And that was several years ago. And subsequently, with the success of that concert, of course, and how wonderful she is, I've invited her back, and we've collaborated. In fact, we've played the Barber Sonata before, amongst other things. And so it's with great pleasure that I am able to bring her to Alaska to showcase her as an individual soloist, as well as a collaborative partner of mine in these sonatas.
So you've mentioned you've been to Alaska many times. In fact, you play a pretty important role in Alaska's classic musical scene. Tell us about that.
Well, in 2007, Paul Rosenthal, who's a historic figure in classical music, and I say historic in what he has done and how he's led the way, everybody knows Paul, and Paul and what he does and has done is legendary. He created essentially the format for the Chamber Music Festival. Prior to 1972, most festivals were symphonic in nature, education-based, and he in Sitka, Alaska, created the Sitka Summer Music Festival, and after 37 years, asked if I would succeed him in taking it another 40 years. So on his 40th anniversary, I celebrated that with him and then took the reins. So I've already done two festivals after his 40th. And, you know, the Sitka Summer Music Festival has evolved into not only being a summer festival in Sitka, but a touring organization that brings classical music and culture to Alaska in its entirety. We tour throughout the state throughout the year, both in the Autumn Classics, which I'm coming to now, where we're playing in Sitka, Juneau, Gustavus, and Anchorage, six concerts. But I come throughout the year with other musicians and take the music to classical music to villages, to communities that wouldn't necessarily be able to afford or access this kind of music and education, which will come hand in hand with it. And we do that in February and throughout the year. So it is kind of Alaska's premier classical music presenter, created by Paul Rosenthal. And I say that Alaska because we take the music to the people consistently. And I believe, you know, there are at least 30 or 40, 50 concerts that we give throughout the state in any given year.
Well, I'm sure you're a wonderful addition to that enterprise. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with cellist Zewell Bailey. He'll be performing Sunday night with pianist Lara Downs. They're both wonderful and brilliant musicians. The concert's at the Jack at 7:30. There'll be light hors d'oeuvres and a no-host bar. Tickets are $50 and $25 for students. And I heard on yesterday's radio show that there are some $10 student tickets available. And you can get the tickets at the Jack or at Hearthside Books. And I believe this is a concert you should not miss. And I want to thank you, Zewell, so much for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure. And I look forward to seeing everyone. And it's I want to be very grateful for Linda Rosenthal for creating such a wonderful canvas for us to be able to visit and perform within.
Okay. Thanks so much. And we'll see you in Juneau soon.
Okay. Take care. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
And that is Lara Downs, and I'm going to go ahead and move on to our next guest because we're running out of time, and I have with me Kristen Bartlett. She's from the Juneau School District. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you.
And what do you do for the school district?
I'm the chief of staff, and I also do policies and regulations, and I work with communications. So I work on the website and outreach and communicating with our community about what's happening in the schools. So that's why I'm here today.
Great. And how's school going so far this year?
So far, it is going very well. We started last Tuesday with most of our grades, and then Thursday the kindergarten started, and today was the first day for preschool.
Great. So I know you have a couple items you want to talk about, and what are they?
Well, the school open house events kick off in full swing tonight. We have open houses going on at all of our schools over the next few weeks. A couple of them already happened at the Juneau Community Charter School and at Yakuska Dakahiti and the Montessori Borealis program. But tonight, Zontagini Middle School will be having their open house. And tomorrow night, Floyd Dryden Middle School. And on Thursday, all of the schools will be holding their report card to the public meetings at every school to talk to families about the progress of each school and student performance at each school.
And what are the times for tonight and tomorrow night?
Tonight is 5 o'clock and tomorrow is 5 o'clock. Also, all of the open house events are listed on the front page of our website under announcements. So I'll rattle off some of these events, but if you need to refer back, the junoschools.org website has them all listed, dates and times. Next week, Riverbend Elementary School will be on Tuesday at 5:30. Thunder Mountain will have their open house on Wednesday at 4:30. And Harborview and Auk Bay Elementary Schools will have their open houses on Thursday. The week of September 9th, on Monday the 9th, Glacier Valley Elementary at 5:30 p.m. Tuesday, September 10th, Mendenhall River Community School at 5:30. Wednesday the 11th, Gastineau at 5:30, and Thursday, September 12th, Juno Douglas High School will hold their open house at 6 o'clock. And again, all those dates and times are listed on the Juno School District website at junoschools.org. And I just wanted to say that this is really a great time to begin getting involved in your child's school, and it's a kind of a casual time to connect with teachers, to visit the school, to be able to get to see different areas of the school and maybe meet the music teacher or the librarian, some of the other staff that you might not be able to see when you go in for your parent-teacher conference later this year.
So who attends these?
This is mostly a family event, so siblings and parents and grandparents, aunts and uncles are all invited to attend each open house.
And the annual school summit, is that something you want to mention?
That's coming up later in the month. The school summit is sort of our annual report to the community. So at that event, we will be talking about the district overall. I'm talking specifically about student achievement and student growth over the last year, our graduation rate. We'll look at attendance data and discipline data, survey data. We do a parent survey every year, and school climate and connectedness information. We'll look at our career and technical education programs, our highly qualified staff. It's just basically an overview of how the district is doing.
Great. So, for more information, junoschools.org has all the information on it. And is there anything else you want to add?
The school summit will be September 25th at 6 p.m. in the Thunder Mountain High School auditorium.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for coming in, Kristen.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Good luck with all these events. Thanks.
This is Bird Note. As the sun sets off Maui, washing the ocean in crimson, a pair of Hawaiian petrels calls. Crow-sized seabirds with long, slender wings, the petrels sit at the mouth of their nest burrow, dug high in the rim of Haleakala volcano. One petrel flies out, winging rapidly toward the ocean. At the coast, it passes over a blowhole where the sea explodes through a gap in the rocks. The petrel glides low over the dark ocean, snatching squid from the surface. This foraging flight may take 2 days, even a week. Then the petrel flies back to the nest at night, crossing above the surf line, ascending to the mountaintop nest burrow. Here, it feeds a single chick. Hatched in July, the chick grows rapidly, and in December will be ready to join the adult petrels for a life at sea. The soundscapes featured in today's show were recorded by Gordon Hempton and provided courtesy of QuietPlanet.com.
And that's it for today's Juno Afternoon. Thanks for joining me. Thanks to all the guests today, and thanks to Jeff for arranging the guest list and choosing the music. To listen to any of today's interviews or any other Juno afternoon programs, visit the KTOO.org website under local programs and Juno afternoon. Please join us tomorrow at 3 p.m. for Juno afternoon. Our host will be Lori Scandling. We'll talk to Linda Rosenthal from Juno Jazz and Classics about Sunday's Made in America concert. Learn to be a volunteer firefighter with guest Ed Quinto. Mark Wheeler will be here to highlight his new ice cream and coffee shop. We'll get the details about Petersburg's upcoming Rainforest Festival, that, Writer's Almanac, music, and more tomorrow at 3 on KTOO-FM. And the weather is increasing clouds and rain developing in the late evening, lows around 53, mostly cloudy tomorrow, chance of rain, highs around 62. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.
We have moved assets in place to be able to fulfill and comply with whatever option the president wishes to take.
The Pentagon prepares for likely airstrikes in Syria.
It's Tuesday, August 27th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Coming up, the latest diplomatic and military moves in response to the use of chemical weapons in Syria.
Former NATO commander Wesley Clark on lessons from past interventions that might apply in the next one.
If we're going